Welcome to the GVA Legal Podcast. My name is Jean Kambuni and I am your host. On 26th July 2022, the Children's Act 2022 came into effect, repealing the Children's Act 2001. This new act gives priority to family-based alternative care as opposed to institutionalization of children in children's homes. On today's episode, we will talk about foster care. And our guest is Okada Buluma, Program Coordinator at the Tree of Life Kenya. Also with me in studio is Winnie Aloach, an associate in the Dispute Resolution Department here at Gikera and Vadgama Advocates. Welcome, Okada.
Asante sana.
And welcome, Winnie.
Thank you.
So we'll go straight into it and we'll start with demystifying what foster care is. So what is foster care?
When you talk about foster care, it's just the placement of a child with a person that is not the child's parent, relative, or guardian. But this person is willing to maintain and take good care of this child.
Okay, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And who are the persons qualified to foster children? Who can be a foster parent? Winnie, do you want to try that?
Now, our new act that was enacted this year gives us the criteria to who can be a foster parent. And these are similar to what we have for adoption in a way, comparing the two. So who can foster? Basically, we have a single woman can be able to foster a female child. A male adult can also foster a male child. And they also have to be qualified to be foster parents, meaning that they have another process to go through to be qualified as foster parents before they're allowed to now foster.
Maybe just to add, yes, that whoever qualifies to become a foster parent has to be at least between 25 years and 65 years of age. It implies, just as my friend has said, that you can be a single person who is between this age bracket, who can be able to foster. However, if you are a lady, you cannot be able to foster a child who is male unless you have your own child who is male, and vice versa. If you are a man, you can also not be able to foster a baby girl unless you have a child of your own who is a girl. So these are just some caveats that are there in relation to single parents. At the same time, for you to be able to qualify to be a foster parent, you must have been a resident in this country for at least 12 months continuously. That implies if you're not a Kenyan, it implies that you must be a resident for you to be able to foster. The other aspect is that your criminal record should be also that you have a clean criminal record for you to be able to foster. So there are these aspects that are looked at for you eventually to be able to foster a child.
So if I can repeat what you guys have just said, mm-hmm. there is an age criteria that used to be able to foster. You have to be between the ages of 25 and 65.
Yes.
There's a gender criteria for you to be able to foster. So of course you can have spouses within a marriage can foster, but if you are a single person, whether you're male or female, mm-hmm. if you're female, you cannot foster a male child unless you have your own male child. And if you're male, you cannot foster a female child unless you also have your own female child.
Sure.
Then there's another citizenship criteria, if I can call it that, mm-hmm. that if you're a foreigner, you have to at least have been a resident in Kenya for 12 months before you're allowed to foster a child.
True.
Then let's go to the next question. In the context of fostering, what are the differences in the responsibilities between an adoptive parent or a birth parent and a foster parent? What can these parents do? I'm now a foster parent. I've chosen to be. I meet the criteria. What can I and can't I do?
Now, when you talk about a foster parent, you have equal responsibilities, or your roles are equal to those of the birth parent of a child. For sure, issues about identity don't come into play because the identity of the child has to remain intact. However, as a foster parent, you have the responsibility to ensure that the rights of this child are somehow respected. It means this child is able to access, for instance, education, issues about food, issues about health. So just what the birth parent will have done to this child, the law expects you to be able to provide this for this child.
And what are the limitations? Are there any things that a birth parent can do that a foster parent cannot?
For sure. A birth parent, you can be able to go out of this country with your own child. Yes. However, a child who is under foster care cannot be taken out of this country without the permission from court. And even if court gives that permission, it will give also conditions because this permission that the court gives must be based on, for instance, it could be something that is disease or health related. So the child is going out of the country for medication purposes, But the court eventually will be able to give restrictions or conditions that regulate this, that guide this. Otherwise, a child under foster care cannot be taken out of this country. Yes.
And who is mandated to place a child in foster care, Winnie?
Now, the Act provides for, we have the CS, one who can directly place the child in foster care without a care order. We have the children homes who can do that with the court order or the care order, that as we call it in the new Act. And we also have the director who can also place the children directly in the foster homes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
I will just also add that when she talks about the CS, now in the practical, in the field, we are talking about the secretary, because now the secretary is the from the children department, the director of children services. The secretary is the head, and this secretary has officers on the ground up to the level of the sub county. So we have sub county children officers. Sub county children officers are now the ones mandated to be able to place children in foster care with foster families. That is, if a child doesn't have the court order, but if there is an order that is issued over a child, maybe for the child to be in a rehabilitation school or for the child to be in a CCI, a charitable children institution, then the representative of the secretary, who is the subcounty children officer, works together with the manager of the institution or the children's home to be able to place a child in a within a foster care arrangement.
Now that you've spoken about the lowest level of, if I can call it, delegated authority within the children's department, mm-hmm. I want to talk about the process of foster care placement. What mm-hmm. is the process that you go through to place a child within foster care? And I think there will be two ways, either by the court, because you've spoken about the court giving an order for a child to be placed in foster care, or with the secretary's own motion, how do you place a child in foster care?
Now, when you talk about placing a child in foster care, for sure there's a process of, first, you have to identify this child. Or once you've identified the child to understand the case history of this child, then there is a part of assessment to try to understand what are the needs of this child. So there is assessment of this child. It's important that before I proceed to know that there are, when you're talking about foster care, somehow there are two parallel processes that have to go hand in hand. There is a process targeting the child, and there's a process targeting the family. Because when you're talking about the child, you identify, you assess the situation of this child, then you do tracing of the family of this child. Because we need to get to know whether this child has parents, and if they are parents or relatives, what is the situation? What is it that made this child to be separated from the family? Why is it that it is difficult for this child to be reunified with that family? Because when you're working with children under foster care, there are two principles that are normally guiding. There is the principle of necessity and the principle of suitability. So first, we have to determine whether is it very necessary for this child to come out of the family setup. If there could be a better way to resolve the case of the child, so that this child can go back to the biological family, so reintegrate this child back to his biological family, then that is the best decision to be taken. However, after the assessment of the family, it is determined that this child cannot be reunified with the family, or the situation within the family is so dysfunctional, so the child needs to be placed under alternative care. Then we determine which is the best alternative care that will respond to the needs of this child. So there are many alternative care options. We have to consider, are there relatives? So if there are relatives, first, before even thinking about foster care, you've got to think about kinship care, so that this child remains within the family framework. If within the family framework, the relatives, the uncles, aunts, the situation is also still not tenable, that the child cannot be placed within these families, then foster care is considered. For you to eventually place this child in foster care, then you have to start preparing this child. You have to make this child become alive to the fact that he or she will be placed with a family that he or she is not related to. But the whole objective is to give him a conducive family environment. That is a process that you're using to prepare this child. On the other end, as you're journeying with this child parallel, there is the process of identifying the foster family. For you to be able to identify a foster family, there is a lot of work that has to be done prior to that, a lot of creating awareness within the community, within the society, so that people show interest in wanting to become foster parents. There's a recruitment process whereby eventually they make an application, their forms to be filled at the sub-county children officer's office. And then there is capacity assessment that is also done to the prospective foster parents. Home visits are done to their homesteads to be able to understand how is the family environment, who are the different people who are found within these homesteads. And before coming to the sub-county children office to express this interest, what is the take of the other members within this family? If they are children, are the children aware that this is a decision that the family has arrived at? If it is the mother who has come to present the interest, and there is a father in the family, is the father aware? Because we want to be sure that the whole household is ready to welcome this child. So an assessment is done around that, and also to determine what is their motivation. Why is it that them as a family, they have decided to give an opportunity to a child to have this family experience? Based on this, after this assessment, capacity strengthening is done. It implies we organize trainings for them so that they become alive to different dynamics that come into play when you get a child. For instance, this child can be coming from the streets. This child can be coming from a children's home, and you don't know what kind of experiences these children had before now reaching this stage of wanting to be placed within the family. So you realize that on one end, there is, with the training and psychosocial support, there is the preparation of the family that is taking place. On the other side, I arrived at preparation of the child.
To ask, since you've done a pilot program on fostering, how mm-hmm. long does it take to go through this whole motion of having the two sides and mm-hmm. preparing the foster family and the foster child?
Now, before I respond to the duration, maybe just conclude the process, because we've just arrived at the point of preparation. After preparation, there is what we call a process that leads to the matching, because the whole idea is we want a family that can adequately respond to the needs of the child. Yes, the family might have certain preferences, because some families will say we can take care of even brothers or sisters, siblings. Some family can say at the moment we don't have the capacity of taking care of a very small child. We can take maybe care of a teenager, a 13-year-old, 14-year-old, because that is where their capacity is. Others will say we are not able to take care of teenagers. I would prefer a child who is below maybe 5 years, because then that's how best I can be able to help this child. So a matching process is activated whereby a criteria is followed that is clearly stipulated by government, that is in the guidelines to be followed. On conclusion of the matching process, there is case planning, whereby the caseworker together with the child on one end, and then we have the family, foster family, the identified foster family on the other end, they are able to come up with a plan looking at the different domains, focusing on the needs of this child. The child, in terms of education, what are the gaps? When we talk about from a psychological perspective, what is it that needs to be done? When you talk from a social perspective, what are the needs? So quite a number of things are taken into consideration when you're doing case planning, after which preparation again is done for now eventual placement of this child. Along the way, there is what we call registering of this foster parent, because after the training, there is need that eventually the foster parent is registered, is given a certificate to that effect. And then once the matching is done, there is what we call a gatekeeping mechanism. Within this system, there is what we call a care reform committee that is formed at the level of the sub-county children office. That committee, which is multidimensional in nature, people coming from different professional backgrounds, they review the case, the situation of the child, the reality, the strengths of the family, and they need to be able to determine whether the family adequately responds to the needs of this child. And then they're the ones who eventually approve. They say, okay, as an independent organ, this adequately responds to the needs of this child. Eventually, bonding process is activated, and the child eventually is placed within the family. After placement, there is monitoring that has to happen, monitoring visits that are done to this family. A case review is also done, whereby based on the case plan that was done, after a certain period of time, maybe some few months, it is determined, are we making progress or are we regressing? Are we, something is not working out. So that if there's something that needs to be changed, then it is changed. Towards the end, we have to determine an exit plan, because foster care in itself has a temporary nature in itself.
Yes.
A child, either after a period of 1 year, but maximum the law allows for a short-term placement, it is 3 years. So it is, you're given permission for 12 months, renewable 2 times, after which, if the situation doesn't seem to have been resolved and the child is not able to be placed with the family of origin, then what happens is that the court has to determine on whether long-term placement can be made possible for that family, to ensure that the child experiences stability, to avoid multiple placement, because also multiple placement affects a child psychologically, and also if that is in the best interest of the child. So it is a process that we have to be ready to journey with the family.
Now, I have several questions, and I think we'll begin with Winnie's question. How long does this really long process that you have elucidated take?
It is not really long. It is not really, I would say, it is important that we recognize that here we are dealing with a child. We really have to do the much that it takes to ensure that the rights of these children are safeguarded.
Definitely.
Two, the duration can even be range from 3 months, because it depends with the availability of the parents.
Yes.
All this is something that you can start a process today. You are given an appointment within the same week. The following week, some training is organized and home visits are done. A training is organized. So even within a period of 1 month, a child can easily be placed.
Within the home.
Two, it's important to note that we have even children in emergency situations. So we have emergency foster care. And when you're talking about emergency foster care, it is immediate.
So you go through the same process, but at an accelerated pace.
Accelerated pace or even in reverse. Because when a child is in a situation of danger, the first thing to do is to remove this child from danger, isn't
it? Place them in a home, then now work backwards to
exactly regularize. But now in that case, it implies that you have a pool of foster parents on standby.
Which was the question.
Parents
I had.
Who have already been trained, who have been already identified, trained, and they are there. They are like an additional resource.
Do we have this pool of foster care parents where if, for instance, one of our listeners wanted to present themselves for foster care, they could present themselves to a particular location, be assessed, mm-hmm. home visits are done,
yes.
they are also trained, and they are ready to accept a child as need would be?
That one, we have some parents who already, we have some pool in certain counties in this country, we already have some standby foster parents. It is a reality that we'll want it to be spread all over the country. But I would say it is something that is possible, because we've tried, for instance, in Nakuru, we have a pool of foster parents that are just on standby. Even in Nairobi, it's a process that is ongoing. And that's what we'll want to encourage. So that all this process that you would say in quotes, very long, it is not, once you have a pre-qualified foster parent, it means what remains is just you have a child that is identified, you assess, you do family assessment, family background tracing, and it's a process then now you have to do matching. And it becomes, within a short time, a child who is in a vulnerable situation is placed within a family. But it is important to note that that process is good not only for the child, but also for the parent. So that the parent is also fully aware of what kind of a child is going or she's going to be dealing with. We don't want that while already you have a child in the family, is when you are like, this one I wish I knew before. But also we've got to know, we want to encourage people that we don't have angels out here, isn't it? Even our own children, your own birth child is not an angel. It is not a smooth ride when you're raising a human being. So just the way you experience challenges raising your own child, the same challenges will be experienced raising a child under foster care. So all of us can do it.
And just to ask, since we already have this pool, is it integrated with also the government?
This pool is anchored at the sub-county children. You remember the sub-county children officer's office that I talked about?
Yes.
He or she, that officer is the one who keeps that register. Mm-hmm. He is the one who even participates in training these foster parents. Children officer is the one who even conducts the assessment. So you cannot, as an independent entity, you cannot come up and say, I've already assessed, I have already trained. Now, just the government should give. No. The children officer is the one mandated by law to be able to place this child under foster care. So before placing, he or she must be sure, must verify, must have even seen that family set up, must have interacted with the parents, must have trained them at some point to be able to say, okay, I think when I place this child into this family, then I'm sure that the child will be safe and will be well taken care of.
If I can ask a final question.
Yes.
Now, from the point of we have various children homes, yes, and probably maybe they want to integrate into the system and to register the children that they have as foster children. So what are the steps or who can they approach? Because I know we have quite a number of homes within our country, and we would like to educate them.
Just to add again to what I was saying about the register, remember that in the country we have what we call CPIMS, Child Protection Information Management System, that has been rolled out in the entire country. All the counties are now logged into the CPIMS. It is the one that collects all the data relating to children, not only in children homes, but even in these other options of care. So it implies that even a parent who has a child informally and wants to formalize, you just need to go to your nearest sub-county children office. Because we have 47 counties in the country, and each county has sub-counties, and in each sub-county, there is a children officer. So you just need to go to your nearest sub-county children officer. He or she will give you an application form, and will take you through the entire process and find ways on how to journey with you towards formalization of a child that you that is living with you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Okada. You spoke about the temporary nature of foster care. In fact, the Act says that it's for a period not exceeding 12 months, renewable twice, which gives us a maximum of 3 years that a child can be placed in foster care. However, as I think about myself, and I think if I would like to do that, I place myself for foster care, and then I go through the process and I have a child living with me for that 3 year period, I get a sense in which there's some attachment that will happen between myself and that child, and sure, that child and my children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what are the options that we have for posterity after this foster care placement comes to an end? Can we, for instance, convert foster care into adoption or into another formal, more long-term mode of care?
I want to say that, in fact, that is one key area that provides the difference between the Children Act 2001 and Children Act 2022. While we were piloting under the Children Act 2001, that became a serious concern from foster parents. They were like, now, I have started this journey. It's very beautiful. It has its challenges here and there, but there are a lot of beautiful things. Now, what happens if this child, it becomes difficult to reunify this child with the family, or you've done all your tracing and you're not able to find any family around this child? The new act provides a transition process from foster care to adoption. A transition process that was not there in the old act. In the old act, you could not be able to transition from foster care and adopt this child. But right now, we have the possibility in law that to address issues of attachment, but mostly it's also because you are not able to find the family of this child, or even if they are there, maybe the situation is dire in a way. With consent from that family, it is possible to transition from foster care, short-term foster care or long-term, to adopting a child. Two, there's that also that possibility of having not only those 3 years, but you can make it long-term foster care. So being able to take care of a child up to the age of 18. But that one has to be determined by court, as I said earlier, whereby issues about stability of this child will be considered. Also the best interest of this child will be, because we want to avoid multiple placement. The moment you remove a child from one family to another family, you are doing more damage to this child. So the new act is very progressive, and that's why it addresses these issues.
Now, you have spoken about the differences between the new act that we have, the Children's Act 2022, and the differences between that and the repealed act, the Children's Act 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And you've spoken about the Tree of Life's contribution and your realization of the challenges of foster care as you implemented foster care. Mm-hmm. I'd spoken earlier that you were doing foster care before the act came into place, and you made a contribution to this new act. So my question is this, what was your contribution to the Children's Act 2022? And maybe before we get to your contribution, could you tell us a little bit about the Tree of Life program on foster care that you did before, the areas in which you piloted?
When I talk about the areas we piloted, I know it will be a bit long narration. Maybe I just reinforce that one of our contribution was that aspect of transitioning from not only short-term, but making it possible for foster care to transition to adoption. For us, that is a key concern that emerged from parents who already have children. And they were like, now, which way forward? It was a recommendation from the foster parents that we just channeled to the right ears, and it was taken into consideration. The other concern that we were able to pick from our pilot is how to foster children with disability. And I know the new act speaks a lot in different ways on how to respond to the needs of children with disabilities. So, and especially also from government services perspective. And I believe that is important. The other aspect is giving prominence to alternative care options rather than institutional care. Because now from our pilot, we were really dealing with the effects of a child who has stayed for a long time under institutional care. And we were really like, unless prominence is given to alternative care, we'll be finding ourselves just repeating, because we'll be having many children still first going to the children homes before they can be placed under foster care.
In fact, let me remind you, I think you gave us a statistic that is worth repeating. What is the importance of placing children within a home as opposed to putting them in an institutionalized system?
Now, this is a statistic that was generated by UNICEF. And, you know, the UNICEF has the advantage of seeing experiences all over the world, whereby it is clearly stated that for every 3 months that a child spends his or her life within a children's home or within an institution, this child loses 1 month of his or her development.
And that adds up. So as a child keeps on growing and those 1 months add up, you can find a child who's 18 and is literally developmentally 15, 14, even 13 years older.
Exactly.
Therefore, the placing of them within a home setting encourages their development.
Exactly. And so within our society, we have care leavers out here, and you can clearly see it evident. And you're like, something has to change. We have families out here. We have people who, I believe, even if we're going to talk religiously or spiritually speaking, I believe we have people who can open their homes. People who can open their houses, people who can open their hearts for a child. You see, the law, for instance, the new act clearly indicates that you can be able to foster up to four children. However, you can even be able to foster more. If, for instance, we have siblings we have six siblings, and we don't encourage separation of siblings. If you find yourself with six siblings and they need to be fostered, a family that has the capacity can be able to foster even all of them. However, we are saying that one family can at least be able to foster four children. So if the law allows us that kind of elasticity, what about your family, my family, opening itself up at least just for one child? That one child that you normally see in the street when you're walking around, that one child that you're very ready to go and give a donation in a children's home. When you go next time, why not consider and explore that child instead of receiving something from you once in a blue moon, maybe every Christmas? Why not be involved in the life of this child? Get to understand, what is it that made this child to be separated from his family? What is it that you can do to enable this child have the possibility of growing within a family setup? What is it that we can do as a society?
Yes, Winnie.
What I'm hearing a lot from you is that it brings us down to, how are we raising our children and what is the impact of that post 18 years of age? So my question would be, we've gone through the foster process. I've taken in foster children. So what is the success rate just coming from now the 3-year pilot that you've done? What are the challenges and what can we do better?
I will tell you that it is not a rosy ride. I always like starting from that side, because I know there are a lot of beautiful things that come with fostering, giving a child this possibility. But it's important that we should be ready to know that these children, most of these children, for those who are in children homes, children who are in the streets, are struggling with a lot of things. These are children, for instance, those who are in the streets, are children who are forced to become adults, so for them to be able to survive. They are fighting between life and death. A child who is in the street is not sure whether tomorrow he will be alive or not. A child who is in a children home is a child that not only from a developmental perspective has the challenges, the social challenges we've talked about, is a child that is somehow identity-wise, culture-wise, has a gap. This is a child that is used to living within a program, like there is a bell ringing at a certain time for you to do. In our families, we don't ring bells. Have we ever asked ourselves that a child that grows within that kind of a setup, when he becomes an adult, how are we expecting this child, this person, to be able to come up with his own family? If he has been, for him, he's used to only the bell. The success rate in terms of foster care, from what we experienced, is more than 80%. We were able to place 72 children within a period of 3 years in foster families and also some kinship families. Out of these, we had few challenges with around 3 cases. And these 3 cases were somehow, one of them had relapses in terms of drug use because of having been taken to a boarding school, but
and got exposure to,
to it. We were also affected by the emergency that erupted within the COVID-19 reality, where we had a lot of teenage pregnancies. So one of the teenagers that we had placed under foster care also fell within this kind of an emergency. But apart from that, I would say the feedback you get from a child, you get from even the families, are very positive. We eventually even managed to transition some from foster families back to their families of origin. So being reintegrated back to the families of origin and now closing the case. You see, to some extent, foster families or foster care becomes like a bridge. Instead of this child being in an institution while you are trying to resolve the issue that made him to be separated from his family, you are giving this child an opportunity to stay within a family setup while his family of origin can be traced, the problem that is there can be resolved. You're just becoming, it's like you're doing what God made us, brought us here to do. Let me see. It's a great opportunity, my friends. Welcome to this world.
It's really interesting and encouraging that the success rate is quite high.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have another question, and it takes us back to now this foster care. I spoke about wanting to take on a child into my home, for instance. And
yes.
If any listener out there would want to take on a child into foster care, there are costs that are associated with children. However you look at it, that child must eat. If they are under the age of 5, that child may require diapers. Diapers cost money. And definitely they require a roof over their head or to go to school. Now, who pays for these costs?
We will really encourage, and we, from law perspective, from what the Act, how it is silent on it. However, it is somehow expected that the foster parent will have the capacity to be able to offer this to this child. However, we also recognize that we have scenarios or situations whereby there could be challenges in that line. As a result, from a government perspective, I'll just say something on behalf of government, but I will allow government people to talk on their behalf. Government has programs, has cash transfer programs that relate to focus on orphans and vulnerable children, so OVCs. So as civil society organizations, we are trying to somehow lobby so that these OVC programs can be able also to be linked to foster care like framework. Already, they are in some counties, already they are linked. Others have even linked them to kinship care families in a way. So it is something that I believe with the time, as we go on with the implementation of the new Act, government services eventually will reach these families. However, from the civil society organizations, we have organizations like ourselves. In our pilot, we were supporting families from an educational perspective, so providing support where for families that could not be able to provide the material needs or what is required in terms of school fees or school costs, we were able to support. We were providing psychosocial support. So we had a counselor and a social worker on standby whenever there is any need, ready to be able to respond. We were also able to, for cases, because now, for instance, you remember during COVID, a lot of families lost their jobs. So we had to come in. Everything was based on, was needs based. So we had to come in from an economic perspective, helping them, for instance, to establish businesses. Others got into rearing of chicken. Everything depended on what is the reality of the family and how the family felt. Maybe just a small boost would put them back to their feet. However, we believe without support even from charitable, from civil society organizations, already I am taking care of my own kids. Isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If we look at it from, if we flip it, the way I'm taking care of my own kids, I'm taking my child to school. I'm providing my child with food. I'm providing my child with clothes and a place to sleep. One additional plate on the table for just such one child. And I do believe when you are eating, we know normally there's normally something what tumalizi chakula yote, isn't it?
Nkweli. Hata mgeni akitembea akifungua mlango sasa zile tunakula atapata.
So you put to look at it from that perspective.
Yes.
That there is always an additional plate when we are cooking, when wherever we are. That additional plate, and in fact even we have families that even throw the leftovers, isn't it? Instead of us arriving at that point of throwing the leftovers, why don't we create an additional plate for that vulnerable child? And God will bless us through him or her. I'm sure about that. I have seen it happen. I'm a testimony.
Thank you, Okada. Winnie?
Okada, just one final question, just to connect our street children with the foster care system. For those who keep on either running away from children's home or do not want to go through the route of the children's home to a foster care, so what available options are there?
When you're talking about street children, all these services are all coordinated through the subcommittee children office. I want to repeat that.
Two,
they might not want to go through the children's home. And I know on one end, families might be a bit skeptical having a child directly coming from the streets into their families. So programs have to be designed that are short-term in nature for purposes of quick rehabilitation for this child eventually be placed. This program can be based within an institution for sure, but then the end goal is very clear that we're placing you here for this short duration of time for you eventually to be placed within a family. And I believe also if that becomes something that is clearly communicated, that aspect of running away will even be mitigated in a way. Because when a child runs from a children's home, a lot of questions should be asked. The children's home was all this good. And I came. You did not arrest me to put me in a children's home, isn't it? I followed you willingly. But I got in there. Maybe I found what you told me and what I'm experiencing are two different things, isn't it? And maybe that is the reason as to why I'm like, oh, if this is what truly is here, I better just go back to the street. That's why I would run. However, if I come and I realize what you told me, you'll stay here for a certain period of time. We will try to address your situation. But then at the end of it, we will want you to be placed within a family. And I truly see that happen. I don't have a reason to run away. You're giving me an opportunity to be a child again. Because you see, in the streets, I have to know how I will get my breakfast. I have to know how I will eat lunch. I have to know whether I will sleep hungry or not. And I also am not sure if I will be beaten up by a mob out here. If I'm given an opportunity to be able to live within a family setup where there's an adult, there is a constant adult that is mad about me, taking care of me every morning akiamuka, hey, where is Okada? How was your night? Hey, Leo Shule, what did the teacher say yesterday? Every child craves for attention. Every child wants to be loved. No child will run away from love. Every child wants to be a child. And that is what we are asking everyone. We are old adults. We were given an opportunity at some point in our lives to be children. Why can't we give that opportunity to others?
Thank you very much. I think that brings us to the end of our episode. We have had a wonderful discussion about foster care and the benefits of having children within living within a home setup as opposed to the institutionalized setup. Thank you. I'd like to thank my guest, Okada Buluma, Program Coordinator, Tree of Life Kenya, and my colleague, Winnie Alwoch, an associate in the dispute resolution department here at Gikera and Badgama Advocates. Thank you so much, both of you, for your excellent insights. And I am your host, Jean Kambuni. We hope that you found this episode informative. Tell us what you think about it and what you like about it on email. Our email address is info@gvalawfirm.com. You can also follow Gikera and Badgama Advocates on social media. You can find us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as GVA Law Firm. Thank you for joining us on the GVA Legal Podcast.